and Francesca present Seven Matrimony.
Welcome to another episode of Seven Matrimony. I am Matt Scalise, and with me, as usual, my lovely wife and co-host, Francesca Scalise. And today, it's the episode that a lot of our regular listeners have been waiting for quite a while. And today, we are talking about none other than the dreaded, the anticipated Steven Spielberg's War Horse. And yes, I did, in fact, finally drag Francesca to see this movie. It looked like it wasn't going to happen for a while, but we made it. And I'll just turn it over to Francesca, because that's the person everybody really wants to hear from right now. Everybody wants to know, was this boar horse, was this snore horse, Francesca? What do you think about this movie? And I want to make sure you get right up on the mic so that your opinion is clearly made.
Uh-huh. I would first like to say it is not a bad movie. Nor did I ever say that I thought it was going to be a bad movie. My position was merely that I didn't want to see it, because it was about a war and about a horse. And frankly, it was.
But did you like Seabiscuit?
I guess. I mean, I haven't seen that in years.
It's not that old of a movie.
There's not a war in that one, though, is there?
No, but I'm just pointing out that there probably are war movies
again,
you like and horse movies
you like.
You're
going to do what you do, which is go like, you hated it so much. I didn't hate it. I did have some problems with it, and I didn't, you know, it was good, but it's not a movie I particularly wanted to see, and the two things that made it a movie that I didn't, you know, love with my whole heart was the war part and the horse part. These are two things that I do not like, and therefore, watching a movie about a war and watching a movie about a horse, I didn't cry. And I cried at the chimpanzee preview before
movie. You actually cried at a trailer. Yeah, the Disney chimpanzee documentary made you cry.
Because he was an orphan. And then he had a friend.
All right, but I'm just going to go through a couple of things here, and I want to ask you if they really didn't do anything for you, okay?
I will tell you the one scene that I really liked.
Yeah, go ahead and do that.
That would be the scene when the horse was in No Man's Land, and it was sort of independent of the horse. That's the thing.
Well, I'm not invested
in the horse, except for when a horse gestures that he'd like to be shot because he was injured. Perhaps you didn't notice that the black horse gesticulates with his nose, with a snout, at the soldier's gun because he's in pain and he wants to be... a suicidal horse who is able to make that known. This is my
issue.
Let me just tell you, this is the primary problem...
Go ahead.
...that I have with the movie. And again, I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but I've heard a lot of people go like, well, it's a family movie, by way of excusing
no,
the horse
No, no,
stuff.
No, no, it's not a family movie. Definitely not
well,
a family
no,
movie.
Well, no, but I've heard that from people, and that's their way of excusing the horse side of things. My problem is, the horse side and the war side are, like, very much at odds. And in a book, you can put together these two things and it could work, you know, because it is based on, like, I think a children's book or like a young adult book. But in a movie, having a horse, you know, with kind of the family-friendly stuff going on, and then really, like, pretty brutal war stuff. Like, it wasn't gory, but it was not... I mean, it wasn't subtle, either. It was people getting, you know, sliced and diced and, you know, bodies strewn all over the place from war scenes. Like, it's not... It was trying to be both, like, a movie about a pet and a movie about a war. And it was trying to do both equally hard, and those two things did not dovetail well together.
But I think that's the point, though. I think...
But I'm saying it's like a tonal shift.
Yeah, but listen, I think that's the point. Because it's trying to contrast the most horrible thing in the world, right? Which is war. It's the worst thing ever. And contrasting that with something that is completely pure and innocent, which no human being could ever be, even the boy. It's, you know, a horse has no... There's nothing evil about a horse whatsoever. It's just a pure... It's sort of like a baby.
That's my other problem
with
the horse.
It's like a baby,
sort of. It's a blank. I'm not interested or invested in a horse. They are not animals. And I mean, again,
but the
this
point
is
his, he doesn't
preference.
Do anything wrong ever, and so he just sort of gets caught in the fray of it. And so you, unlike a war movie where we're following a human character through it, we're following somebody that doesn't have anything to do with any of it, and he's just sort of being subjected to it. And so
why should I be invested in a horse?
You know, I don't think you invest in the horse. I think the horse is something that
I think you're supposed to.
No, it's
either
the,
make your
well,
war movie
some people,
or make your horse movie.
No, listen,
I think both parts of it suffer because
point.
Of the other.
It's the point, though, is that you're being carried through these scenes of, you know, basically just atrocious things happening, and we can keep going through it without being sort of like, okay, here's a good example, right?
Comparing I like how you this, were like, I'm just going to let Francesca have her piece.
No, well, I
and then you cut
a,
me off
you
every
made a,
second.
But this is a discussion. But anyways,
yeah,
a comparison. A comparison is Lord of the Rings. Okay, where it also is sort of like this little innocent character being carried through these different scenes and all these hard things happening. But slowly, it starts to take a toll on the guy, and then it's like sort of.
But
you
he's
could
a
say,
human being, and he can react.
Yeah,
he doesn't have the dead, empty eyes.
But he's
of a
also
horse.
Less. It's more difficult to for him to. Not sort of be affected and continue to change as the thing goes on. The horse is never going to change no matter what happens in the story because a horse is just
right.
a horse.
So it's not, of course, by the way. Don't open that door if you don't want me to walk through it, Matt. Come on.
But what I'm saying is I think that Spielberg's purpose is that he wants, and I can't quite figure out exactly
why. Well, then it
why.
Might as well be the Red Violin or some crap like that.
Yeah, it kind of is the Red Violin.
Well, but you put an animal in there, so you're asking me to care about it, and I don't.
No, not everybody cares about animals the way that your sweet little
no,
Franciscan
I'm not
heart
saying,
does.
I'm not, no, I'm saying, as a storytelling device, then just make it the bandana. You know, like it doesn't.
It kind of is the same thing as the bandana. Yeah, the horse
right,
and the
so,
bandana
but,
are equal.
But I'm saying the way the movie is shot, the stupid horse is supposed to be a character. I mean, the movie ends with this lingering glance at the hero of the piece, and it's a horse.
Okay, I kind of agree with you more so on the black horse than with Joey, because I think they personified the black horse even more than they did Joey.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. There's, like, this little bit of personification. Either go whole hog with it or don't at all. Like, literally just let the horse be passive.
It's a fair point. I don't know that I am I don't know that I ever had any shot of buying into the personification of either horse anyway. But that's, as we've discussed before,
well,
I don't care about animals
look,
in movies.
I like Homeward Bound. As much as
yeah,
the next
but those
guy.
Animals
I'm saying
talk.
It's a, I know, but I'm saying that's like that. There's this like taste of it that kind of sits wrong with me. Either just let him really be, you know, just a device, or you know, give him more personification. But it was like, well, he's mostly going to be a passive participant, but he, you know, then he's going to like, you know. Go and volunteer instead of his friend the
right.
horse. Like, it's the tone. But again, in a different movie, that's okay. But the problem is you have these really, really hard war scenes, which again, in a book, you can maybe play that off, even in the play, maybe. Those two tones wouldn't be so such a stark contrast. But they really shot the war stuff very seriously, too. So it's like this kind of dramatic, you know, shift of importance. Like, your equal screen time is given to the horse and the boys fighting in a war. And it's like, well, how am I supposed to care about a horse when there's, like, you know, 12-year-old kids getting
right.
shot in the face kind of thing?
Well, I do think, first of all fair points, and I'm not going to dispute anything you just said. But I think the movie is less, even though it does spend a lot of time on that, to me, the effective parts of this movie are the human stories, not the war sequences per se, the actual fighting, but the human stories, like which, as you know, has been talked about, it's sort of episodic, and so, like for me, the early part of the movie, everything before the sort of first time that Joey sets off and leaves, so basically like the first episode of the movie where it comes down to, it's this weird little Irish village, and
weird
the plot,
little Irish village, you say
it's great.
not weird. It's just a village.
No, but I love that it's like everyone in the town knows each other.
Well, I'm sure it
might as well be a Lord of the Rings, you know. It's the Hobbit portion of the movie.
All right. And what else?
And so it comes down to this, like, little story of that the whole town is watching, and he's got to plow the field to win.
Right.
And
Revis Lupin being just an a-hole.
Bad guy, yeah.
Ugh. I wouldn't have even noticed.
But it's a great little story episode thing. I loved it. I was totally moved by the plowing scene.
Well, you know what, though? If the whole movie had been... I'll tell you what. If that had been the thrust of the movie, if it had been like, you know,
no
gardening
war.
Horse, then the tone would have been fine. Genuinely. Like, if that was the movie, yeah. It was just... That it was this family, they had this horse, and he was a horse who wasn't supposed to be able to plow a field, but oh no, we're going to lose the farm if he doesn't plow a field. Like, that's a movie that I would watch and have no problem with the horse being that character. But it's that, you know, that's the first, you know, fifth of the movie, and the next four-fifths are, like, hardcore war.
Well, so. You can't ask it to be something it's
I'm
not.
Just saying,
I mean, it
I'm
is
saying,
what it
though,
is.
That's where I would, like, because I'm not saying I'm against animal movies by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying in this movie, for me, it did not work. And in that, you know... In the one of five movies that's
right.
in this movie, that works fine. That horse relationship is good and
that's
noble,
my favorite.
And it's a horse doing what a horse can do.
Yeah,
you know, is capable of.
That's my favorite episode, and I like that they parallel it at the end of the movie with another auction. And although I will say, kind of the way that second auction wraps up.
Makes you feel kind of like he's an a-hole for taking the horse back.
No, but I just don't think it was very neat. I think it was real sloppy. Because, I mean, it's like we felt like we had to bring the grandfather character back and resolve that story. But then he just kind of gives it up. And, like,
listen,
his...
he should have... I thought, okay, the horse is going to go with the grandfather. And that would have been a satisfying ending to me, actually.
It wouldn't have been satisfying.
Because the grandfather needs him more than the boy has now become a man. And he's found his horse.
No,
like,
but he's not.
He said,
he's not a man. He's desperate. I mean, he's, like, in love with that horse. But he...
I'm just saying,
there is no satisfying ending in that situation. What it is they... It felt like they got there and they were like, hell, what are we going to do now? Now we're going to have either Grandpa sad... Or our main character is sad, so
see,
I don't know.
Honestly,
you got to go some way or the other, but I don't think it didn't feel like they'd been building towards that moment for the whole movie, you know. And
well,
it was like
the
perfect
I'll be honest,
ending.
Though, the little girl, that to me, that episode, I was not very invested in, and she was kind of a brat. Like I didn't really like her.
Oh, I liked
her.
I liked her.
She was like. There's a fine line between being, like, you know, adorably precocious.
I don't know what's
happening in my mouth.
The best word ever.
Right now.
Precocious.
She was precocious. It was atrocious.
I liked
how precocious
her.
She was.
I liked her, and I thought that little actress did a great job.
Whatever. I mean, she was pretty, but again, I don't think it's her fault. I just think it was a, like, they were like, oh, she's sassy, but like she's kind of. Obnoxious.
I was least invested in that of all the human episodes. I think you mentioned this scene earlier, but the scene the Englishman and the German soldier come together and cut the horse free is the. Now I mentioned the plowing scene earlier, but that and the barbed wire scene are the best things in this movie, and they're among the best individual sequences that I think Spielberg has made.
Listen,
in the last 15 years.
The barbed
years.
Wire scene, having a little trip back to my theater days, that would be like the perfect little one act to do.
It is.
Or, you know, small thing to do at a theater competition. But that's the other
thing. Look,
he didn't
write it, but you got to give him credit for it. That scene is just played perfectly, the two actors involved and the way it's shot, and it's so it's just so pleasant. I mean,
it's this kind of tightrope act too, though, because it's like they're coming together, but then there's still like little moments of tension in it that like, oh, is it going to go bad now, or you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the other problem with an anthology movie is that you can pick it apart like this. Like, again, you know, two out of five or six episodes, like, you know, the opening sequence, like I said, was good enough that I would watch that movie. And, you know, the sequence with the two soldiers was really, that was probably, to me, actually the most touching scene in the whole movie.
I loved that scene.
I thought that was really nice.
Every beat of it.
Yeah, but then, by comparison, then the other scenes are kind of like, you know, like, and that's, I guess that's the problem when something is so compartmentalized that you can really go through and go like, but I really like this part. That part was not so great. This part was okay. But again, you know, the primary reason I'm not going to enjoy this movie is horses to me. I don't like them. I just don't. I think they're weird. I think they're like, you know, like I said, kind of soulless. Their eyes creep me out. Like, I don't like horses. So that's always going to take me
out.
How
are they different than any other animal, though?
I don't know. They're weird. Their faces and their thing.
See, this is my thing about people get, you know, people are just begin weeping when dogs die in movies. But there's other animals like horses or whatever, and they don't seem into it.
I told you. Paul F. Tompkins said, he was like, my mother says horses are stupid because people ride on them. What kind of an animal lets people ride on them? I think he was right. That's a pretty stupid horse. Stupid animal. Stupid horse. I don't know.
Anyways.
But anyways, so, I mean, that's the thing. And I don't like watching war movies. They upset me. That is not a genre I'm
Well,
I
it's
enjoy.
Supposed to be upsetting.
Right. I don't like to watch upsetting things.
It's not glorified violence in this movie. And really...
But let me just say this. If you are going into battle and you want it to go well, maybe don't play bagpipes. Maybe you would have a very different outcome instead of going in with, like, let's play bagpipes. There's nothing mournful about that. It's not going to go badly if we play bagpipes.
No, it's getting... Look, the bagpipes is to charge the guys up.
I think it's
like,
to charge them up to go in, like, we're going to our funeral.
No, look, they like... when
bagpipes.
You know, like today, soldiers crank, you know, like heavy metal and then they go off because it gets you...
I know, but this is what my point is. Bagpipes
up.
Do not get you amped.
They
make
do.
You feel like you're in a funeral.
Let me tell you, there are actually some college football teams that take the field to a live bagpipe player, and it is awesome.
You're the worst.
Anyways.
Like I said, my choice would be, you know.
What, a saxophone?
Yes.
Yeah?
Well, think of the outcomes of wars if you played a saxophone instead.
Just a shirtless man playing saxophone
yes.
at the
Rob
side.
Rob Lowe, if possible.
Why Rob Lowe?
St. Elmo's Fire.
Did he play a saxophone in that movie?
Yeah.
I have not seen St. Elmo's Fire.
It was super sexy, because in the 80s, if you wanted to be sexy, you played a saxophone. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Also, though, we didn't even mention Tom Hiddleston and Benedict Cumberbatch in their
Cumberbatch,
little
who suddenly aged like 20 years because he put on a mustache.
He was way old.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It took us a long time to figure out who he was, and it's so funny because in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yeah.
I had a hard time with that last syllable. He's like the young, fresh faced guy.
Yeah.
And then they put a mustache on him and he's like, pip, 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 pip.
I'll tell you why. And look, we hadn't done a ton of research about this before we went. So actually, for most of the movie, we were operating under the assumption that Tom Hiddleston was Michael Fassbender because they do look alike. But I think what put me there was that I'm thinking about Fassbender from Inglourious Basterds, where he played a very similar character.
Right.
Where it's just sort of the like dignified, you know, World War era British
yes.
commander.
Let's. So they were good. I enjoyed them.
I liked them.
It was fine. It was just, you know, the episode was kind of like, meh. But let's talk about Jeremy Irvine. Is that his name? Irvine?
What's yeah, yeah, name? Yeah.
I really liked his performance. I was conflicted the whole movie watching him because he reminded me of Ethan Hawke, who I do not like.
Why do
and
you
my
remind
little brother
you of Ethan
Tim,
Hawke?
Who I love.
But
he kind of looks like him. Like, if you think back to before...
Yeah, I guess.
Sunrise, or whichever the first one was, when he was a
yeah,
youngster.
Right.
He kind of looked like him. But like I said, he also reminded me of my brother Tim, who I love. But he was an
well, most of our audience won't be able to agree or disagree
know, well,
with that
whatever.
Point.
I don't mean particularly in looks. I just mean he kind of reminded me of Tim. But he was particularly well cast because he sort of had this... He was like kind of like a big-looking kid, but he definitely looks like a kid. Like he had sort of this farm, like this kind of... boyish farm look about him that was like very like he looked 14, which is just like a hard look to capture. You don't see that
yeah.
genuinely captured in film because it is when before boys have like shot up and turned into men, but they're like not quite the chubby little boy that they were, so they're like this like sort of doughy in between stage, which of course, you know, I find kids when they're at their awkwardest the most endearing.
But he looked like a young, it's like what the young male movie stars used to look like in what I think this movie is doing. I've you know, our buddy Graham is called this one of the greatest films ever made, by the way.
But that's not hyperbole.
Well, what?
So it's not hyperbole.
Are you being sarcastic?
Yes.
Yeah. So, anyways.
There have been a lot of films made.
Yeah, but Graham, you know, compared this to, and a lot of other people have too, to a, like a John Ford era type sort of sweeping Western war type thing. And I think that's tonally what they were going for. And I think more than any other element of the movie, he's sort of what sets that tone, Jeremy Irvine, because he's got that sort of like earnestness of a, you know, 1950s sort of young male movie star thing.
I liked him very much. I will tell you something that, and have, I mean, I, God will strike me down for saying anything against Janusz. I was really irritated by it. It was like a motif, I guess, in it, that they kept on doing like low shots, like the camera's low, shooting up at people through the whole movie. And at the horse. And it was like a weird, it was like often enough that it was bothering me. That I was like, good Lord, like put the camera on eye level.
I didn't really notice that.
Yeah, through the whole thing. Which I don't, you know, generally that's meant to, you know, indicate, like in Citizen Kane, famously, it was used to make him look like bigger than life. And, right. You know, but like it
has a lot of
didn't really make any sense to me why it kept on being a motif in this movie that it was like the camera was like looking up at them. I don't know what they were trying to accomplish, unless maybe that's a stylistic choice to mimic the 50s movies.
Ben,
I don't know.
Ben Stark, if you're listening, I'd like to hear your opinion on the grammar of Spielberg's high angles in this movie. Because
that was called a high angle?
Yeah.
It seemed like a low angle.
No, I think, well...
Well, the camera's low. What I'm talking about is the camera's low. The people are... It's shooting up at the characters. But, you know, it was definitely a pretty film. I mean, I think that's part of what took me out of it, too.
Movie.
Well, but I think that's part of what took me out of it. So hard sometimes. Took me out of it, too. It, like, the ending sequence looked like, you know...
That was the most John Fordy moment in the entire movie.
And it kind of, again, it sort of took me out of it because I felt like it was Gone with the Wind when, where are they in Gone with the Wind?
Georgia?
Yeah, when like Georgia's burning.
Yeah.
Like it felt very soundstagey to me.
I think it was supposed to.
Some of the opening stuff was so beautiful and naturalistic on these, you know, rolling hills and everything. And then that ending part, again, kind of took me out of it because it felt like it was being like, really melodramatic in the visuals.
Well, I don't think there's
this red behind them, and they were all in silhouette. Like it bothered me.
I don't think there's anything in this movie that's particularly realistic feeling. Even the war stuff, it's all very very glamorous movie stuff. I mean, it's none of it really, you know, like all that stuff in the woods when before the soldiers are getting ready to do their charge. That was like, I mean that stuff looked like, you know, it was heavily. Pre-planned and sort of sketched out beforehand, and it was all just, you know, the trees are all in a line. Every little detail of it was like it was like a drawing.
By the way,
a painting.
Can we talk about the fact that his beloved horse shot bombs at him when he was in a foxhole?
Maybe well, he didn't shoot him. He just dragged the gun up.
Well, I mean,
he was a tool of the. Of the military. And that's the thing. Really, the horse, in part, you could argue this, even though he's a horse and not a person, as you have pointed out, that there's a huge difference.
He's not a person.
No, I'm saying you don't care about him because he's a horse. But really, the people, you know, 90% of the people that we meet in the movie are no different than him in that they're just sort of being pushed along and wandering through this war, and they just want to get out of it alive. They're not really particularly like bloodthirsty to go kill the other chaps. They all feel sort of bad about it at some point. And, you know, I think that's a little bit of what's going on here is that Spielberg's sort of saying, you know, everybody involved in this mostly are just innocents who are along for the ride. And, you know, we're all sort of on the same level when it comes to a war. It's basically just a bunch of innocent people being, you know, being marched around into their own deaths or into other people's deaths. You know.
Well, again, you could have shown me that without the horse.
But the horse is a metaphor, sort of. It's definitely, and some people sort of, I think Spielberg has danced around war before. And, I mean, he's obviously made quite a few movies about it, but I think...
Yeah, Dance Around, you're right. No. Schindler's List was kind of like a subtle...
Some people would say that he glamorized it a little bit in Saving Private Ryan. And some people, you know, there's mixed opinions about that movie. I would say this movie is, message-wise, the most anti-war movie that Spielberg has made. Although, certainly Munich is very anti-violence. But, you know, this is sort of a gentle anti-war movie.
Maybe if there can Munich's be one. Anti-violence. It's vigilantes.
No, don't you remember what happens in that movie? They all basically, it's the spiral of violence. It gets out of control. That what they're doing is basically portrayed as completely immoral and corrupt.
But see, I think you're wrong about War Horse. I think at no point does he go, this wasn't a noble war, you know, worth fighting.
I don't think he comments on that one way or the other. I think he just says, look, the Germans are people, the Brits are people, and nobody really wants to be there, and they're all just mowing each other down with bullets, and they'd rather be at home not doing it.
Well, to be fair, Spielberg's not really telling, you know, this isn't his story. This is...
No, but he chose it. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, and that again points to it's, you know, not that it's a bad thing, but I'm just saying that's sort of a message you would put across in a children's slide. I mean, I guess you can't really say, surely is at least a young adult.
There's book. No way. I don't know what this is rated. I assume it's PG-13.
But look, I mean,
There's no way I would let kids see this movie.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe a middle school age kid, perhaps, but... You know, again, and I could even understand in a book that stuff. It's much harder to watch that than to read about it, I think. You know? I
mean, yeah,
there's a way
sure.
that in a children's book
no,
you
I mean,
could write about war and it wouldn't be so horrific
yeah,
as literally seeing people slashing each other.
Every middle schooler reads Red Badge of Courage or whatever.
Or whatever. I didn't read it.
Well, most of us read it.
Did you read it?
Yeah.
So you don't know what it's called?
Well, no, that's what it's called.
Red Badge,
but like
Courage,
I'm saying,
or whatever.
But they make kids read
right.
war stuff.
So, but I'm saying, like, there's a significant difference, you know. And again, it's just strange to me when they chose to do the stylization, though, too. If you really wanted this to be, like, a movie that they could show in a grade school, then, you know, be stylized.
I don't think that's what he was going for. I think he just was making a... Like I said,
well, if you're making an adaptation,
John Ford westerns
book,
are pretty violent too. People end up getting shot usually and stuck with arrows and whatever.
Well, I've said my piece. I did again. I think it's a good movie, but I don't think it's The Second Coming. And I'm not even sure that I think it should be a best picture.
Whoa!
Who said that?
You don't think it deserves
a
nomination?
You know what? It falls into maybe you know some technical stuff, perhaps, but. It falls into, again, it falls into that realm of, like I always say with Saturday Night Live, and you're always like, why don't you want to watch it? Well, if I know that, like, if something's going to be, like, 30% of it is going to be good, then that does not make it a good
you're
show.
You're comparing it to Saturday
no, but
Night
I'm
Live.
Saying, that, again, this is the problem with an episodic movie like this is that, you know, it begs me to pick and choose the good stuff versus the stuff that was kind of meh. And so, you know, we've talked about, like, two things that were, you know, good. Like really
well, that
solidly,
were blow.
And,
they
know.
Were great, though. But
yeah, but you know, two greats out of you know five or six is not a great movie.
I will say, assessing it the way we have, I don't think. I mean, right away, I can already think of two movies that I liked a lot better than this one this year, and that were more impressive to me. And I actually kind of think. You know, I don't think it's fair for me to put this on a scale with Tintin or whatever. I do think that that this is really good work from Spielberg, and it's very encouraging.
What were you going to say? Don't be scared because of the Flanagans.
No, I'm not afraid of the Flanagans.
In what they're going to say.
No.
But if you were going to say that you enjoyed Tintin better, you were entitled to that opinion, Matt Scalise.
Overall, I did, but it's probably because I saw it first before this.
Don't be pansy. Be brave. Be brave.
No, I would say that amongst the best picture nominees, I think The Artist is what we were talking about. It is a cohesive movie. Everything in that movie works on the same level at the same degree of effectiveness. I also think that I like Hugo, I'm sort of more in general moved by Hugo than I am by Warhorse as well. And, you know, I don't really know if I can go through the rest of them, nor does anybody want to hear that. But that's two off the top of my head that I think are better, more effective movies overall than Warhorse. So, I mean, it's not my favorite movie of the year, and it is good, and I would say I will choose to put this in kind of a body of work for Spielberg from 2011 that leaves me very encouraged about his career and his skills and where he is as a filmmaker. And I'm anxious to see, he's working on some very big stuff in the near future. He's got the Abraham Lincoln movie coming. He's got a couple of other things in the works that would usually leave me a little bit skeptical, but right now I'm back to sort of implicitly trusting Spielberg and thinking that if he's making something, it's probably going to be good. But that said, I'm not going to go buy War Horse on DVD when it comes out because it was good. I'm glad I saw it, but I'm not blown away by it.
I think I saw some man tears, though.
No, the stuff in it that's good is great. That plowing scene really got me. I'll admit it.
That is strange to me.
I don't know. It was just
I looked at my little weeping husband, and I was like, "What is happening over there?"
It was
like,
just,
it's kind of it's very inspiring, and nice, but I didn't bring to. I'm a weenie. I cried about the chimpanzee thing. Although I will stand by that. That looks good and crying worthy.
Well, I guess you can expect a Cinematrimony podcast on the chimpanzee documentary later this year. But
I don't know if you can because I think I might be crying too much.
Look, I can't really explain why certain scenes hit me more than others, but I think for whatever reason, the plowing scene did it for me, and it was just.
You know what I was doing while you were crying?
What?
I was thinking, like, dang it, I gotta get a garden going in my house. I really want to plant some stuff.
You were thinking, I wonder if I can hook my cat up to a tiny plow.
Yeah, right. No, I was not thinking that.
And say, walk on! Walk on!
I mean, that's the other thing, too. That, you know, it was like too many movies going. Like, if you could have made the movie just about him and his family, like...
You keep asking it to be a different movie than it
is,
though.
What I'm saying, though, there's these kernels of goodness. Like, they kind of set you up with this whole thing about his relationship with his father and, like, he doesn't respect his dad, but, you know, he's worth being respected. Like, again, if you had just made that first chapter a movie...
Yeah, you feel like they didn't develop some of it
enough. Get a better, you know, resolution with his dad that, you know... Because the dad was, like, a very interesting character. Like,
yeah.
He was kind of pathetic, but, you know, the mom was sort of excusing it because, you know... But he wasn't really doing what he needed to do. He was, like, talking a big game. Like, that would have been an interesting movie. The dynamics of that family was actually quite interesting.
Yes, I do think it all started to fall off when the war began. For me, my level of emotional investment started to drop off at that point. And just, you know...
Because you're with the characters for 10 minutes.
And I just love... I just sort of love that universe that they're in early
in the movie.
Well,
the house was ridiculous. I want to live
there.
Well,
I wasn't enjoying it on a design magazine level, but I just like all of the little villagers in the auction environment and that there's this tycoon that like owns all the land in town and all of that. And
right. That's the movie I would have, if it had been that movie, I would have been happy.
Well, I enjoyed that part of it a lot. Well, so you did it. You
good,
saw,
not great.
You,
that's
you
my
saw
assessment.
War Horse. You made it. You didn't snore.
I didn't. And I wasn't even bored.
And so, I mean, now having seen this, do you have any desire at all just for the completionist in you to see extremely loud and incredibly
nope.
close?
Not at all.
Me neither.
No desire.
And I have almost, some psychologists would call it a disorder that I have, I think, the level to which I need to complete things.
Well, first
and
of all,
I still
wait,
don't want to see
that
movie.
What are you talking
movie.
About, the completionist to me? I think I've made it quite clear that
no,
Oscars are not
I take
something
that
hugely interest or
well, nor does finishing movies, because you'll just easily walk away from a movie in the midstream if you're not into it.
No, that's only since we've had children.
But I don't know. So, I mean, I'm gonna try to probably put up a Film Nerds post at some point that has a link to all of our Cinematrimonies for every Best Picture nominee.
And it's going to go crazy. It's going to blow but up.
Unfortunately, you will not. You will only have 8 of the 9 nominees because we just don't have any plans on seeing Extremely Loud because, frankly, it just doesn't look that good. And if somebody can sell it to me, if somebody can just convince me that it's awesome and going to change my life and I'm wrong about it, I'm willing to listen. I may see it. I may rent it, you know, later, but I'm just not compelled enough to want to see it.
You're just not that into it.
I'm just not that into Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
No. Me neither.
Sorry, little kid that won Jeopardy.
Well, but that is a good reason to become the lead in a movie.
That you know geography questions?
Right. I don't know geography questions. And
that you know...
I am not starring in movies, Matt.
That you can sweep potent potables?
Well... That's anal not, bum covers?
That's right. The penis mightier?
All right. Keep it clean. Come on.
All right, well, anyways.
That was so annoying. You just looked at me and I could tell you were trying to think of other ones.
No, I can't remember any of the other categories.
Yoy.
All right,
just
well.
The way your mother likes it for me.
All right, thank you, Francesca.
You're welcome, Matt.